Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm John.
And welcome to the show. Just John. Nothing. Okay.
Last name, Knee. K-N-E-E. John Knee.
This.
Now they know. Just kidding.
This week, we will review The Last Matinee. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. But let's continue our TV Corner segment as we review episode 2 of Archive 81.
Archive 81.
So I asked you before the show started, he's like, what do you think 81 stands for? Because I'm totally the myth.
But yeah. I have a feeling we're about to get to that point where, like, I think more things are about to get explained. Because I got to admit, the first episode was a very set up episode, and this episode got a lot juicier.
Yes.
I actually started, like, really enjoying what was going on.
Yeah,
it was very, very cool.
Same. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, everything felt so, like, less set up, more streamlined, that I thought what I thought the show was about was they kind of get to it right away. So you have Melody, who's doing who's back in 1993. She doing the Viceroy. She's she immediately gets introduced to the cult. There's a cult, and it's Samuel and Annabelle. They're kind of like involved with it, and they're like praying to some like weird little statue down in the building and stuff like that. And I was like, I thought they were gonna wait like the entire episode to get to this, but no, we're already there. We're already like full steam ahead.
Can I be superficial for a second?
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna.
Okay.
is it me or is Dina Shahabi, right? That's her name?
Yeah.
Which I think it's awesome that she's Saudi Arabian. I've seen her several times and I never really bothered to check. Because I'm always like, oh, it's like hotter Katie Holmes.
Okay. But where's the complaint?
No, that's it. I just want to mention that she's like hotter Katie Holmes.
Oh, like, I thought you were going to have the complaint I have.
What?
I'm going to say this really close to the mic. I don't like her voice.
I'm glad you said that close to the mic because it's basically whispering on a podcast.
Yeah.
So audience at home can't hear what's going on. All right. And break into. Yeah. What were you saying? I couldn't hear you because you were whispering.
That's the meaning. Nothing, eh? Archive 81. No, her voice is a little annoying. I don't know. It's just me. Maybe I'm being superficial.
Yeah.
Because you said superficial, that's where you were going. So, but you actually went to something more meaningful.
I just wanted to mention that she was hot. Yeah, she's like a hot Katie Holmes to me.
And
sorry.
We immediately start making connections with Dan now. We know why maybe the dog... we know why the dog was probably... Why Melody has a picture with the dog. Because she was a patient of her dad's, right? So there's clearly a picture.
And she,
possible
and she
relationship.
Had that dog. Yeah.
But what
and
I
she
thought.
She had that dog that she does not have.
Yeah.
She does not have in the story we're watching, but yes.
But my favorite part, the part that I'm like, boing, about, that's a boner. Boing, that's my.
Schwing.
Schwing, that's a better. It's a better schwing. Thing that I'm actually really excited about is that there's possibly, now would you tell me how you read this, there's possibly time travel going on, right?
Yeah, I'm holding that opinion for the next episode because I'm a little confused, but yeah.
Because this episode...
Maybe it's like a weird... Like, since he's doing these things with the tapes, maybe the tapes are starting to do something to him.
Yeah, that's a good reading. I read it So to explain, so Dan has a surrealist dreamlike moment where he is walking down the hall of the Viceroy and he knocks on the door with, what's her name? Melody answers. And that yes. same scene, and he immediately wakes up, right? He immediately like wakes up out of it. So that scene plays out differently, but from Melody's point of view, she hears a knock on the door, she answers, and there was nobody there. So that leads me to believe timeline merging. But
yeah,
I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. Cause that's like not at all where I expected the show to go. I feel like the show can go anywhere now if it's something along those lines. But we know the show ends on a massive twist, probably the strong twist that Melody didn't die in the fire. Boom, boom, boom. She's alive somewhere.
And she didn't start the fire. Eh, Springsteen? No, you know, I'm going to quickly mention. So I've seen Evan Janangiat.
Nailed it. No last names.
which, you know, plays the Samu character. And we've seen him several times. I keep calling him like, what do I call him? Like older version of the guy, that kid from Breaking Bad. Because, okay, like, I used to confuse him. I was like, oh, it's that guy from Breaking Bad, right? And I was like, no, this guy's older, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
He's like, every time I see him now, I start to realize, like, man, this guy's a fucking phenomenal actor. Like, he's just...
He's so good, yeah.
Very natural. Mm-hmm. Like, in everything he does, it's very natural, but it's never the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, let's just say we just reviewed The Lake House. The Night House.
Yeah.
Wow, unintentional that time. The Night House. And even in that one, he wasn't necessarily any sort of super character. He was kind of a straight character, right? He was like a bad guy, but like he sort of. And he was also playing the demon version, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's still like a stark difference in character to this show. Like I like how unassuming and kind of sensitive and insecure he's kind of playing a little bit, and then you know you get some weird like sex scene he has with
Annabelle,
his friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Annabelle, like super hot, by the way, superficial again. Yes. Anyway, we're on the Joe Rogan podcast, everybody's hot and we're gonna use slurs for no reason. I didn't realize he was gonna be that great. That good of an actor.
Yeah, he's excellent. I think there's still jumps. Okay, so there's still like, it's the whole scenario to me is unbelievable. Like, I'm not quite understanding why this character wants to continue to work with this shady business, shady organization that wants you to clean these tapes of people that were murdered, and you find out
he has that conversation with his friend. There's that whole scene about that, of his conversation with a friend. He wanted to leave, but his friend's like, hey, basically convinced him, like, you know, they'll just find another person to do this, and maybe you learn more stuff about your dad, and, you know, you're actually getting paid well to do this, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just work at the end of the day. Like, he's basically saying that, which leads me to believe
his
friend is in on it 100%, which I figured from the first episode, but, like, he's 100% in on it.
Yeah, he wants something out of it probably, too, because he does that.
Or he is a guy fucking bankrolling this whole thing and just lying about it.
Possibly, yeah. Those are all possibilities, yeah. Because I think you're right about that. I think he has more to do with it because, yeah. I don't know. I'm finding little, I mean, I like where the show's going and it's fine. It's fine. It's not like a big deterrent, but it's always in the back of my mind. Like when people make decisions that seem like, out of their own interest,
yeah,
it's kind of like kind of bugs me, but it's fine. We're going in a good direction because I feel like all the setup that I thought the show was going, they just got it all out this episode, and now the show can be anything. And I don't know where we're going now. So
yeah,
that's
because it's so weird. Like what he and his weird ex machina sort of house that he's living in right now.
Yeah,
he's like stuck at.
Yeah,
because even what's his face that's been in like 1,000 movies, what's his name,
he's the what's
Martin
it
Donovan.
He's the guy that
Virgil Davenport. Huh?
What the fuck is the name of that movie? Oh my god. He's a I'm ruining. What's that Christopher Nolan movie? The weird one.
Tenet?
Tenet! He's the Tenet guy.
Oh yeah, he's the Tenet guy.
I'll give you one word. Tenet.
I know him from something where he ended up being the bad guy and I thought it was really stupid.
Oh yeah, he's a really good character actor. Yeah, he's in a ton of shit.
Yeah. Hmm? But yeah, I'm like, I'm hooked now. I'm like, oh, this is good. I'm excited about the rest of this.
First episodes are hard because you got to do a lot of setup. You got to do a lot of building, figure out where you're going to go. Now that is out of the way, and now they can just focus on what the show is. And a little side note, James Wan actually executive produced this. So,
oh, okay.
New master of horror, James Wan. So it's kind of interesting. I'm hoping this is going somewhere. Interesting.
Not to be confused with the shitty series Masters of Horror.
Still, what?
This is what? What?
Couple of good episodes.
What? What's going on? I'm hoping this goes somewhere nice. But you know how some of these series always end on like a note that makes you like, okay. Like that's how I felt about Raised by Wolves, which is why I haven't continued watching the series since the first season. I'm like, all right.
Oh yeah, that show was massively disappointing. Overall, like I was.
Yeah.
That first episode, I will stand by. That was one of the best first episodes I think I've ever seen.
I was like, amazing first episode. I was like,
yeah, it's super fucking interesting. Completely falls apart after that. It makes like no sense.
Speaking of making no sense, I'm going to interject and talk about something that has nothing to do with reviewing movies.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Yes.
Let's walk on over to Johnny's personal life corner.
Johnny's personal life corner.
Yeah, I love it. So I went out last night with a buddy of mine, which I got I feel like it's important for me to.
What were you wearing? No, I'm just kidding.
Nothing.
Very one little tight.
Long coat. That's it. I take COVID very seriously, so I took all my precautions, blah, blah, blah. But I went out to a bar, and we're having a great time just, like, shooting the shit because we were both on the same show that we don't love being on. Not going to mention anything. I've already quit, and I'm moving on to my next thing Monday.
Hey, all right.
And luckily, my immediate bosses are, like, very good friends of mine, so they're like, yeah, dude, good for you. we go out to a bar. He's a very, very good friend of mine, Elijah, that lives nearby. Which in fact, actually we went out Thursday night too to the same bar and it was not nearly as busy as it was Friday, obviously, but you just figure things might change. They don't. like the second half of the night, cause we were already kind of tipsy. We're like, fuck. He like really wanted to play pool and I'm like, man, it's always taken up, but like, I'll keep an eye out. And then finally the table opened up. We're like, fuck yeah. So we start playing pool and we're getting drunk. And then I hear a voice.
Uh-oh.
That's very familiar. But on a scale of, not a scale, that's the wrong word. Like on a level of like, wow, I can't even pinpoint where this is coming from. Like I can't pinpoint how I know this voice, but it's very familiar and it feels like older in my memories. And I turn and look, I'm like, oh wow. Maybe I should be super ambiguous about this. This young person over here looks very familiar, and I'm almost positive it's somebody I know. And the more I look at this person, and the more I hear them talk to their friend, which is like right by where I'm playing pool outside. I'm like, oh fuck, this is somebody that I was seeing somewhat casually, I guess, like 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, maybe. I'm trying to figure out the time, but I'm pretty sure I like just turned 30. I think I met this person and it was like, I was celebrating like, kind of, it was like right before me turning 30, and I went out to Little Joy with our friend, our buddy Stouffer, when Stouffer mm-hmm. was still living here.
Yeah.
And I randomly met this person, and we just start chatting, and then we exchange Instagram info. But then that quickly went into like, oh, we'll just talk. And this person was like, oh, yeah, we should totally celebrate your birthday next week. And I was like, oh, man, I don't really know this person, but they're very attractive. We start casually seeing each other. And then I decide that I'm just maybe too old and too mature. But in retrospect, I was being more immature than this person was probably being, because they had just turned 22. And I was like, oh, ooh. Maybe. I'm trying to figure out that, but it doesn't matter. What I'm trying to get at is, like, I essentially ghosted this person because I just decided to be a shitty person during this time. But I had just gotten out of a relationship, and I was, like, a little sad. And I do this thing where, like, I just kind of, like, randomly date, serial date, and do all this shit, which I'm not doing now, which is interesting. It's called maturity, I think. I'm just going to hyper-focus on building stuff and rearranging my apartment. But it was like, I see this person, and then this person and their friend move over to the heater that's in direct eye contact with the pool table. And I had already mentioned to my friend Elijah, hey, I know this person. I was casually seeing this person a long time ago, and I shittily just like ghosted this person. I once in a while say hi or something, but you know, I did a bad thing. We're going to play our second game, and I said, you know what? Fuck it. Should we just invite these people to come over and play with us? And I look up, and they look up, and they're like, oh my God, John, is that you? I'm like, oh, come on. We know that we saw each other. Come on, play pool with us. Let's go. Which, you know, I had to have been drunk to fucking agree to do this in my own head with myself. I had an internal conversation like, is this a stupid idea? Absolutely. Let's fucking do it. But it was like such an enlightening thing, such a weird idea of closure for a certain chapter in my life. I would say this person just officially completed their first short film where they did most of the work alone. And I was like, dude, that's fucking fantastic, phenomenal. You know, I used to be somebody that used to gatekeep these things, like, oh, this person doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. No, I do this or whatever. But honestly, at the end of the day, I think it was just jealousy because I never, you know, followed through with most of the things I said I was going to do. And I was like, wow, you know, essentially I'm proud of you. Like, this, you know, looks great. You know, and I think like they put in a disclaimer saying like, hey, the footage is kind of low quality, blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned, I'm like, don't ever do that. You know, you don't have to take my advice, but don't do that. You know, your work should just speak for itself, no matter what the fucking quality is. It doesn't matter. Some of the best films I've ever seen have like shitty video quality.
You know? True. Absolutely.
Yeah. Evil Dead too. Anyway, so it was just like a great, like such a weird experience where I'm reconnecting with somebody that I haven't actually really seen in person for like 5 years, which in my head, I'm like, I probably look like shit, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Like I'm in like such a weird, you know, crossroads of my life. And it was very nice of them to actually ask, like, hey, you know it probably doesn't seem this way, but I do care. Like, I saw that, you know, your father passed away. And then, how have you been since then? And I was like, well, honestly, like, this happened. You know, I've lost several people because, you know, nobody takes this shit serious. And I'm also getting out of a relationship. I got out of a relationship last year also. And they're like, wow, that's like, you're going through a lot of loss. Like, how are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I feel like I'm becoming a better person, evolving, yada, yada. And then I just start talking to them about like, I think from what I can tell from your stories on Instagram and blah, 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 you're having a wonderful life and I'm so, so happy for you. And it was just like, great. Like what a interesting, like I'm randomly seeing this person again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
But they said like, I thought eventually I'd run into you again. I'm like, yeah, maybe that's interesting because like I rarely go out. Like, you know, I used to be the social butterfly, and now I'm like, you know, butterflies like the dark. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I'm going to pretend I'm one of those butterflies. I'm a moth, except I don't like lights. Okay, there you go. That's my story. That's Johnny's little personal life story right there.
Johnny's personal life story.
I just had to talk about that because, like, what a strange, like, I feel like stranger experiences are happening to me like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you got something positive out of that interaction. And most interactions we get from people from the past are mostly negative. So
that's true, yeah. But I feel like things keep coming full circle. And maybe what I don't realize is I think in general people don't put a lot of emphasis on the impact certain moments in your life have. But everybody's paying attention to these things. And it doesn't matter who you interact with. You might be important in some respect. And they might be important to you. And you just don't want to admit it. Or you don't want to really think about it or talk about it. But maybe it's okay to do that.
Ooh, yeah, I like that. I think you're right. I think that... kind of put it... The way I kind of see it is like... You always talk about, like, I have a lot of employees, right, that I'm in manage or whatever. And positive or negatively, I am influencing them, but how every day, right? So, like, either positive or negatively, like, where they're having good experiences or negative experiences. Whoever I'm interacting with, whatever they go on to do, whether they stay at the company we work at or they go on to do other something else, like, I have affected them positively or negatively. And it's something that... I was like, I had to take a step back. I was like, yeah, that's true. That's true. There's been employees that I've had tougher relationships with, and there's other employees that I've had the best relationships with, you know, like, and there's some that go on to drive, that go, you know, driving or whatever. And I see them, I still say hi to them. And there's some that I had bad experiences with that we don't acknowledge each other's presence. We work in the same building. So it's just kind of like, I think that's kind of what you're saying as well. Like, you never know who you're influencing or who you're touching in your life at any time, right?
Yeah. So, and it's interesting to think, I think also with what you said, people they have negative interactions with absolutely remember you and probably think about you often, you know, more often than you would think. So in your head, when you have a positive relationship with somebody, especially because, like, when you see these people every once in a while, you know, you kind of get that, like, oh, I forgot your name sort of deal sometimes. But the truth is, like, once it clicks in their head, like, this is who you are, it's, like, always a positive thing, which is kind of awesome. Like, what an interesting thing. Like, our interactions, we just are so reserved and so, I'm not going to say self-absorbed, because it's just how people are. It's just, like, you're living as your own person.
Yeah.
So most of the time you're not thinking about other people, even if you think you are, you know?
It's true.
I don't know. But this one was like, I thought it was a fun experience only because we clearly remembered each other. It wasn't even like, you know, like, oh, you look familiar. No, like, nah, hey, what's up? let's get this over with. I'm not like, whatever. And Well, I don't know how they took it, but I truly appreciated the moment and the experience. And yeah, that was that.
Oh, awesome. Awesome, yeah. Awesome, awesome.
And that's one of my personal life moments thing.
All righty. Let's talk about the last matinee.
The last matinee.
John. Do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
No, but I do have.
That was more of a question than ever, right? Yeah. I'm usually very. That was more of a question. I'm sorry. I don't know why that came out as a question.
All right. But I do have 5 of them, but I should have whittled them down to like 3, but here we go. For Johnny's 5-word plot summary for the last matinee, we have coming in at number 5, interesting movie ruined by patrons.
Okay.
I kind of wanted to watch It doesn't matter. Coming in at number four, a killer with beautiful eyes.
Ah, there it is. That's coming the winner. Coming in at
number three, retractable knife is obviously retractable. Coming in at number two, a coming of age story.
It's true.
And coming in at number one, movie confused about matinee meaning. All right, that's it.
So,
this movie takes place at night, ladies and gentlemen. Just so we know, there is like 5 seconds of daytime, sort of, and then it just moves on.
Yeah. All righty. The last matinee. What you think? Give me your first thoughts.
I didn't care for it.
All right.
It was fine. It was okay. I mean, it was, it like clearly had its problems. You know what? Here, I thought about this. I actually wanted to mention this. I think it's time we stop trying to recreate the mood of the 70s and 80s in newer films, because it is just not working. Our video quality is way too advanced. People try to spin like a kind of a story out of it, which I'm not going to really say there's a real story in this one. Like, there's a lot of useless information at best. That's all it is. It's like hodgepodge, nonsense information, doesn't apply to anything. Who's this killer? I don't know. Who knows? Oh, what about her dad? Doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Who are these people in the theater? Why are they watching this film? Don't know, but the film looked pretty interesting. I'll tell you that. What was it like? Yeah. It was called Frankenstein, The Day of the Beast, I think is what I read on the poster.
Yeah, that's what it's called, yeah.
Yeah, it was a movie.
So, the last matinee. Speaking
of Masters of Horror. Yeah.
So the last matinee is an Argentinian movie, and it is an homage to 70s and 80s slasher movies. Specifically, I would say Argento, right?
Yeah.
And his Giallo movies. I think that's a ton of inspiration. And like you said, there's even a little bit of demons too, because like it's all set in the theater, yeah. Right?
Which was kind of like, well, I will say the set deck team did a fucking amazing job. I'm not going to blame the prop team for only having that one retractable blade for some reason.
yeah, the smallest knife possible.
Which I clearly was a retractable blade. Like they they tried their best to like scenic it too, and it's like, oh, you cut a chip of the blade to make it seem like it's a used blade, but then that would assume that it's dull. So like, I don't know. But it's okay because dude uses an ice cream scooper or something, I guess. I'm not going to lie.
So
I was doing a whole bunch of things at the same time while trying to watch this movie. So maybe I missed some cool parts or something. I don't know.
Well, I am on record as saying I am not a slasher guy. Yeah. But I am... I do like the nostalgia of this movie. This sort of heightened stylistic throwback of that time. I thought it was incredibly well set.
Yeah.
And very interesting place to set a horror movie, mm-hmm. right? In a movie theater. And he's essentially, it's a story about a guy who shows up on the last showing of a movie and begins to kill the audience.
Yeah.
Right? Essentially. And there's like little bits and pieces about who these people are. Nothing like very broadly who these people are. But I got to admit, I found the kills to be really interesting. And there's some like genuinely funny moments in this movie. Now, I don't think it works as a 90-minute movie.
No.
Like, at all. I think that it has, like, there's plenty of like it stylistically has it all down. Like it's completely in its what it's trying to show its affection for. Right. You know, because you watch this movie and you could just the every inch of this scene and every part of this movie is just filled with things that this writer director loves. Yeah. Right. Like
American Werewolf in London, right? I kept thinking that the movie was going to be a porn movie because of American Werewolf in London.
There's like, so where I feel like I related to this movie was I loved as a kid going to, the movies as a kid. Like, and I loved, you know, driving up, seeing the bright lights, the neon lights. I loved looking at all the posters and absorbing them. Every inch of it. I loved going and sitting and like the smelly purple seats that were part of the Cinemark that I used to go to all the time. Yeah, Cinemark. And I like
Carmike.
And I remember like in high school, that's all I would go do was freaking go to the movies. And I have so many like wonderful experiences, like sneaking in, not really sneaking in, but going into like rated R movies. I was underage at the time, so I would go see like Ituma Mata Mien. You know, I was underage then to go, but I bought a ticket and I like felt like I was doing something illegal, right, by watching a movie that I was clearly underage for. And I felt like this movie is drenched in it with there's tons of movie posters. There's even like cardboard cutouts of Crocodile Dundee. Yeah. I don't know if you caught that, but, you know, towards the end.
The set tech team did a fucking phenomenal job. I thought it was like very natural and it felt very good. The way it was color corrected was awesome too. The fake film in the film, I thought looked really cool. Like, in fact, I really wanted to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And like, I love the idea of this grandiose two story old theater. I vividly remember going to like this. I think at the time it was a dollar theater that they had in Brownsville, Texas, where it was part of this strip mall. But it was like this cinema. I don't remember what it was. And I remember walking in and it was just huge theater, giant ass theater. They still had like the giant red curtains that would retract and stuff like that. And I remember going there a lot as a kid. I remember even their seats even reclined a little bit, like they slid back and stuff. Like it was very old fashioned, very, very old fashioned. And at that point, it was the dollar theater. And then this is what this reminded me of, because it had like old kind of ratty seats.
Clearly not clean.
You know, Yeah, and all of that stuff just like really like hit me in a personal way. Now I feel like those stylistic points they had down, right? But I feel like the film itself, like the mood never really really raises up. It's always pretty like one note.
Like the characters throughout. Are a little bit boring.
And Yeah, they're very broad, right? They're very like the acting's pretty good, right? But like they're very broad. It's the annoying teenage kids. It's the little
the guy on the first date who gets a hand job in the theater. Yeah, jizz in his pants.
Yeah, we've all been there. stock. They're like stock roles, right? Like they're just very typical people you see in these movies that are encompassing this theater, and then they're all sort of drawn out very broadly, and none of it really like elevates.
Especially since like they're all in the same fucking theater, and they're all like snooping at each other, but for some reason do not look in anybody's direction while this guy kills these people for like 3 minutes, and then walks away taking their eyeballs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like, I understand it's supposed to be like a like a slasher flick where it's like, oh, just fun loving, but they also try to present it like it's like based in reality, and it was just like, well, a lot of this is like not believable. So
no, it's just true.
Well, if they wanted to keep my interest, they would have kept alive that one dude that got killed off, I think, first, one of the first people that died, the the coworker that was annoying.
Yeah, he was good.
I was like, God, I hope this guy lives till the end just to be like a jerk movie.
Yeah, and his death was actually one of my favorite deaths.
Yes, that's cool. With the
smoke. Yeah. They like, he's smoking a cigarette. He's like inhaling a cigarette or whatever. And they like slash his throat and his head folds back and smoke starts escaping from his neck.
Dude.
That is a wonderful
and all
kill.
All he wanted was a friend to have a cigarette with.
Yeah.
All he wanted in life was one friend to have a cigarette with, because he asked like three different people, I think.
Yeah.
It was just true. Two.
No, and I felt like a lot of the murders were really very like fun, I guess. Is that it?
Fun, more sort of, yeah, sort of fun.
More fun than the Prowler? Is that level? I had more fun with these deaths than the Prowler. I felt like the Prowlers were a little bit overdone. They were a little too... I didn't have as much... I felt like they were a little overdone and cruel. That's kind of where I thought they were. These were a little more in... They were gruesome, right? They were pretty gross. But they were
having fun. Yeah.
I had more fun with these murders, yeah.
But they do these things where it's like real quick, like real... Like a little too quick for my taste, I guess, where you don't really get attached to a character. You barely know anything about a character, but they keep giving these people dialogue. So I'm like, I don't understand why. Let's say like the kid that is kind of stalking that girl and then finally approaches that girl in the middle of the theater, which I think the point of this film is don't stop talking during the film or else somebody will kill you.
But, I think what we're kind of dancing around is the fact that like there's no real plot to this movie.
There's no reason for this guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no motive.
There's no motive for him. Though there is, I read a couple of things, if you want to talk in spoilers and what the sort of joke is, the in joke about who this is.
Oh, okay.
And why it is the way it is. But we can talk about that in spoilers. The killer's identity. But I think the main thing is that just like the basic premise is there. The basic premise works, right? You're basically setting it in a theater and people are getting murdered. But there's no plot. There's nothing really tangible to like pull you in, right? To make you care.
So I think what I'm getting at is like it's pointless story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Which for me is annoying now. I don't know why. After all this time, you know, I'm obsessed with fucking trash 80s films. But like those are legit trash 80s films, so I love them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm gatekeeping here, but I'm like, I don't know what this is. This isn't my 80s trash film.
Yeah. And now I get you. I don't think there's enough. There's an homage, but not enough invention to it, I think, to stand out enough to add something new to the conversation, to this genre, you know? It's just living in this sort of homage, right? It's just living in this homage.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, never really elevates out of it enough to... Because, I mean, everything works about this movie. Like, dude, I think... Like, I know you hate... I think you commented already. I love the soundtrack of this movie.
No, I didn't say I hate it. Oh, no. Maybe I didn't finish my thought. I hated that they didn't actually utilize the other tracks that they had that they made for the film. I think if they had stuck with one idea of what the soundtrack was supposed to sound like, the sound design... Well, not the sound design, but, like, the actual score.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I explain this? Like, for example, Demons just like went all in on the fucking 80s, like hair metal thrash sort of music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they actually had somebody write the score. And then they were like, last minute, fuck it. We're just going to get a bunch of like 80s bands that we like. At the time it was like new bands, but, and that's going to be our soundtrack instead of the score we had. This one, it sounded like they wanted to do that, but the intro and the end credits soundtrack part, I'm like, why wasn't this like in the film itself? I think it would have been a little more of a driving force. Like, they didn't utilize what could be another sensory thing to drive the film up, you know, because some of the shittiest 80s films were like, there's no fucking story. I just enjoy it because the soundtrack is like, fuck yeah, you know, like, I'm going.
That is, yeah, that's actually, when that music does play or later in the movie, when they're escaping from the guy, like it works.
Yeah.
It works. Yes, and there wasn't enough of that throughout the movie, right?
Like, right. I think for like a people that maybe aren't familiar with, like at this point, you can call it vintage film, vintage horror film, a relatable thing, hopefully people can relate to this, is in the first Matrix film, when they fight in the bank lobby, when that fucking song plays, but Propellerhead, I think was the name of the group. When that song plays, you're like, fuck yeah. And then like keeps playing, they keep shooting like, yeah, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. You know, it's just like making you feel that way.
Right.
And this one, I'm like, ah, you know. Like, I don't know.
It's a very quiet movie.
Yes.
Considering all the mood and tension it built to. It was a very quiet movie. It never really got going. I think we are in agreement on that. Like, it never really got moving enough. And I would have liked to have known more about who these people were. So when they're getting their eyeballs cut out, I could maybe care.
Yeah. That, and I think the movie would have greatly benefited with surprise deaths. Like actual scares, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Like even Jason Voorhees randomly came out of nowhere, scared the shit out of you, and then he would kill the person.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
case in point, well, not Jason Voorhees, but Jason's mom. But in the first one, case in point, Kevin Bacon's like in his bed, just like doing whatever, laying down, and then a fucking arrow from like a bow and arrow right through his chest from underneath. You're like, whoa, what was that? And this one, you're like, okay, this person's going to this place because they're about to get killed. You know, yeah. There's no surprise.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right, I don't want to hit on this movie too much. Like it, like you said, it did have that nostalgia factor. I thought it looked cool, but I was like, I don't know.
It's a lot of style over. It's a lot of style. Like it is very stylized throughout, which I think worked on me more than you.
Probably. I mean, I do like the stylistic choice, but. Maybe because it's my trade. Does that make sense? I'm like trying to look for everything else. I'm like, oh, I see that. I appreciate it. I think it's beautiful. But let me look at the rest of the stuff. And I'm like, eh.
No, yeah. The story. There was no story. There was no like intense of plot here. Like, had there just been like a little bit of stakes? Like maybe the first murder was the dad.
Yeah.
Right? So now the projectionist or the daughter who is trying to like, get out of her life and study and do something else with her life has a little bit of stakes, right? Yeah. Like maybe she hates the theater. Maybe she doesn't like being there. You know, there's no like tangible thing there enough.
Or if they were fully aware, like even demons did it better because they were like sneakier about people getting churned in to like the demons or whatever they were. But even that movie, halfway through, everybody was like, the people that were alive were aware that like, oh, fuck, there's something bad happening. Like this one, like I feel like it should have been clear from like the first death. I would have been like, wait, what the fuck's going on? Like if maybe they're running away from this guy the entire movie and still getting picked off, kind of like at the very end with that young girl. If the rest of the movie was like that, I'd be like, oh, this is fun. And now I don't even have to care about the story. But every time he was going to kill somebody, it felt like there was like a story behind these people and I didn't know what it was. And then I didn't care.
I think sometimes when people pay homage to things or the things that people like are never the things that work in movies.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like maybe this guy liked the murders or like the slashing moments, but didn't quite connect why an audience would care about them. Right. Like you need stakes, right? An audience, somebody who watches a movie needs stakes in an investment, right? An emotional connection to something to draw them in. And I think that was one of the bigger things missing.
With that said, I also got the feeling, like you just mentioned, I got the feeling like this guy was trying to like put in like things that he liked or maybe like wanted in life. That it kind of felt like weird moments, like, you know, the dude getting jerked off on a first date in a movie theater, like the kid randomly going up to some chick that he was kind of stalking from like his bus ride to the theater. And then she randomly just decides to like make out with him, you know, like I was like, are these just things that director wished had happened in his life or he thought like would be really cool? Like there's no linear point to any of this. It's just like moments he wished happened. Like the old man that leaves at the beginning because he's so pissed off people are talking.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. That was one guy that I was like, I thought would play better more into the plot, but he just
left.
Like left. Yeah, yeah.
That's the end of that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No.
Well, okay. I need to hear. Yeah.
I have a better head. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No. Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
Did you know that? Did you? So, and I think this is the fault of the movie that the killer in the movie is a reference to he's actually the director of the movie we're watching.
Yeah, I would have never fucking caught that. I would like, there's no.
But that's cool, it is cool, right?
I do like that. But why is he killing think people that are watching his movie? Like, there's only five people watching his movie. I think it'd be like, these are the only people that get to live. But is it because they're talking during the movie?
So the end joke is that this guy, what's his name? The Ricardo Izales is a famous, you know, South American director, like a low budget horror director. And so he put him in his movie as sort of, and he put one of his movies in there and that he's killing people on the last showing of his movie.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Now imagine this was, I don't know, fucking, imagine this killer was Dario Argento. That's what I was thinking. Imagine if he was a killer and they were showing an Argento movie.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe this was David Lynch, or maybe this was like fucking somebody crazy like Steven Spielberg, right? Like something off the wall, like as the killer of the movie and he's showing one of his movies.
But
I think that's kind of not explained. It's lots. It's more of an in-joke.
Like, didn't they kind of do that with, because in my head, the Ghostface killer, not to be confused with the fucking legendary rapper of
R.I.P. rest in power. I don't know if he's dead or not.
I think he famously has beef with what's his name, that white guy that sounds like him, Action Bronson.
Yeah. Okay.
It, like from Scream in my head, like, because Wes Craven's like really good about like most of his characters that he writes are like a piece of who he is. So like in Scream 2, when the killer comes out and kills Jada Pinkett Smith in the theater, like that was personable. There was like more like in that 10-minute segment, I felt more connected to like these people and the killer. But maybe because there's a whole first movie.
Yeah.
But you know.
I just started, when I read that, I started thinking like, oh, that's kind of clever. Like imagine if this was Sam Raimi. And they were showing Evil Dead, right? And you didn't know why they were showing Evil Dead. They're just like, oh, okay, they're showing Evil Dead. Ah, ha, ha, that's just an homage. And then the killer was Sam Raimi. You'd be like, oh, fuck, that's funny. Yeah. That's cool. That's, it doesn't make any sense. Sam Raimi's not killing anybody. But I mean, Sam Raimi playing somebody, killing people at his movie on the last matinee, right?
Yeah.
That'd be kind of fun. That'd be cool. I think it just goes over your head.
It's not a matinee because I looked up the definition just to reconfirm.
You're right.
that would be pretty cool. I think maybe I missed this, but maybe if there was like a throwaway thing where like there's a newspaper on the table that has an article talking about or something, you know, like the failures of the movie or something. Yeah. Or, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because no, I never would have fucking known that. Like,
no, we wouldn't, because I mean, I'm not in the South American horror low budget horror scene. I don't know nothing about. I would. that reference completely goes over my head, right? Or like most people said. So you just take it at face value that it's just about a guy who's killing people in movie theaters for reasons. And eating their eyes, which I thought was really cool. Especially when he like stirred it with his finger. That was cool, dude.
I was convinced at the beginning of the film when he's eating the eyeballs out the jar that they were testicles. So it had a fucking great five-word thing that was like finally a killer with some balls. But no, I couldn't use it because they were eyeballs, not testicles.
Another reason why you hate this movie.
There's not enough dick or testicles in these movies, and I'm sick of it.
I just thought that was kind of a clever thing that completely nobody would know in America. No clue. Outside of like maybe the director and the, like the actor that played the director, nobody would fucking know that. So, but that's actually a real movie though.
Okay.
So if we can find a print of it, we gotta.
It looked fucking fun.
You wanna watch that as really a double feature?
Yeah.
It looked a little nuts. Low budget, nut.
It kind of looked like the movies they were making in Censor, which is also by Gallo Films.
I was going to say that. I thought this film and Censor kind of play with that era, right? That sort of time and era. And I thought the murders were good. I thought the killings were good in this one, just like I thought they were good in Censor.
I feel like people, when they think of horror movies, are like, oh, it's going to be a lot of killing or deaths, right? But like some movies have very few deaths and I think are amazing, like Come True. Okay, there, I dropped it once in the podcast. That's it.
Take a drink every time John brings up Come True.
As you follow his story arc of the film Come True, where he wasn't all about it, and now he's obsessed for some reason.
Yeah, which we voted for it. That's all you voted for on the Chainsaw Awards, right?
Which is kind of surprising because if you re-listen to that episode, I'm like, oh, it was okay. I mean, I thought it was really cool and blah, blah, blah. I don't know about the ending. And now I'm like, the ending's perfect. It's a beautiful film. It's a fucking masterpiece. It's a timeless classic.
It sneaks up on you. Yeah, like fucking everybody got Citizen Kane wrong, right? Everybody loves that movie. So Come True's the next Citizen Kane. Is that where you're planting your flag? I'm planting my flag right now. That's the Come True's. The Mount Rushmore of
some people are saying like that's a strange movies. Hill to die on, and I'm like, I'm still looking down on you with Come True.
All righty. You wanna just go to the do you wanna give it sexy spooky bones?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I have to think about this, but let me just randomly say, I'm going to give The Last Matinee 4 sexy spooky bones.
I had more fun with this stylistic nostalgia kick, but was disappointed with its lack of character development or plot, really. So I'm going to give it just 6 sexy, spooky booms.
That's not bad at all.
It worked on me. What? I don't know.
Yeah,
it was okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. All right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to.